Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI.
Welcome back. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a really powerful social realist novel, Adele Waldman's Help Wanted.
It's quite a shift for her, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, her first novel dissected, you know, the Brooklyn literary scene, all that privilege and anxiety.
Right. Very specific world.
And here, she just pivots completely, turns that same sharp analytical eye onto the American working class. It's all set in this big box store environment.
Fluorescent lights and all.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this. What we really want to explore is how Waldman uses this this pressure cooker situation, everyone competing for one job, to basically take apart the whole myth of American meritocracy.
Mm-hmm. And show the real anxiety that comes with working in the service economy today.
Yeah, that constant gnawing feeling.
And the setting is crucial, like you said. Town Square, this fictional store in upstate New York. It's instantly recognizable, right?
Totally. We've all been in a place like that.
It's like a little slice of American capitalism. The wide aisles, the music that's always playing, that feeling of being watched, almost.
Yeah.
And we zoom in on the MISCAD department workers. They're part-time, juggling shifts, low pay, no real benefits, just precarious.
Living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And then comes the inciting incident. Management announces there's one full-time position opening up. Just one. But it's the golden ticket. Regular hours, a bit more pay, and the big one, health benefits. Life-changing, potentially.
Right. And just like that, the whole vibe changes. What little sort of grudging camaraderie existed, it evaporates.
Replaced by
this intense, quiet, high-stakes competition. Everyone suddenly sizing each other up.
It's chilling how quickly that scarcity turns people against each other, even people who are, you know, friendly coworkers moments before.
It really is.
Because that job isn't just a job. It's like, it's a lifeline. An escape route from constant money worries for whoever gets it.
Exactly. So that leads us to the core question, really. Who are these people caught in this race?
Yeah.
And what does this one job actually mean to each of them personally? Well, Waldman does a fantastic job of giving us four main perspectives. So you really understand the stakes for everyone involved. You might not root for all of them, but you get why they're desperate.
Okay. So who are they?
First, there's Meredith. She's in her late 40s, a single mom. She's the classic loyal employee put in years at the store.
Ah, the veteran.
Right. And for her, it's all about stability for her daughter. She really believed in that old promise, you know, work hard, be loyal, and you'll be rewarded.
Like loyalty points you can cash in.
Exactly. She thought loyalty was like a bank account, and now she needs to make a withdrawal, and she's terrified the account's actually empty.
Oof. Okay, who else?
Then you've got Nicole. She's younger, college-educated, very ambitious. She's a true believer in meritocracy.
Thinks her smarts should win the day.
Totally. She sees this job as just a stepping stone, obviously. And she keeps offering suggestions to make the store run better, thinking that proves her value.
But how does that land?
Well, management and even some coworkers kind of see it as arrogance. Like, she thinks she's better than them. Or worse, she's criticizing how things are run.
Ah, the threat of competence.
Kinda, yeah. Then there's Milo. He's the thoughtful one, the aspiring writer. He's smart, sensitive.
The philosopher of the group.
Pretty much. But he's stuck in this job because of family responsibilities. He needs the stability, but he absolutely hates the competition part. He finds it internally humiliating, fighting over scraps, essentially.
I can see that, the moral compromise.
Yeah. And finally, there's Lucas. He's the charmer, maybe a bit of a slacker in terms of actual tasks.
But good with people.
Exactly. He has amazing social intelligence. He understands the unspoken rules, how to talk to the manager, how to be likable. He plays a social game better than anyone.
Okay, so you have loyalty, intelligence, moral struggle, and charm. Based on traditional ideas of work, you'd think Meredith or Nicole would be the front runners.
You would think.
But the really unsettling part is that the decision comes down to one person, right? The gatekeeper, Tim, the manager.
Yeah, Tim. He's effectively the antagonist, but Waldman writes him cleverly. He's not some evil villain.
Mars human.
More human, yeah. He's insecure, stuck in the middle. He's getting pressure from corporate above him about metrics he can't meet.
And dealing with his stressed out, low-wage team below him.
Exactly. So his actual power is pretty limited, really just this one hiring decision. Mm. But his own anxieties, his biases,
yeah,
they're about to change someone's life profoundly.
And this is where the novel really turns the screw, systemically. Let's get into their strategies, or maybe their tactical errors.
Right.
They each think they're doing the right thing to win loyalty, smart ideas, hard work, being friendly. But Waldman shows how the system itself is flawed. How do their efforts backfire?
It's because they're playing by meritocracy rules, but Tim, the judge, is using a totally different scorecard.
Which is?
Basically what makes him feel comfortable and secure. So Meredith works harder, takes extra shifts.
Shows dedication.
That's what she thinks. But Tim just sees it as, well, what she's supposed to do. Or worse, maybe she lacks dynamism. She's just plugging away.
Not innovation.
Not innovation in his eyes. And Nicole, with her smart suggestions for efficiency.
Trying to impress.
She thinks she's showing initiative.
Yep.
Tim hears it as criticism. Like she's pointing out flaws in his management, threatening his authority. She's too much.
Yeah.
Too challenging.
Wow. Okay, so what about Lucas, the charmer?
Lucas plays it perfectly for Tim's needs. He doesn't talk about work efficiency. He chats with Tim about sports, complains about his own minor problems, makes Tim feel like a buddy, like a manager who's listened to.
He makes Tim feel good.
Exactly. Tim sees Lucas as manageable, not a threat, likable, someone who'll just fit in and won't cause trouble or make him look bad.
Mm-hmm. That dramatic irony is just crushing because we, the readers, get Tim's internal thoughts.
Mm-hmm. We see him justifying it all to himself.
He convinces himself his biases are just prudent management. It's incredible.
And he literally thinks he needs someone grateful. That's the word he focuses on.
Grateful. Which isn't about being thankful for hard work rewarded.
No. It means compliant. It means someone who will be so relieved to have the slightly better job, the better cage, that they won't dare complain about anything. They won't question his authority.
So the employees think it's one kind of race based on work ethic or intelligence, but Tim's watching a completely different one.
Completely different. Based on his own ego, his own comfort level, keeping things just the way they are.
And connecting this to the bigger picture, Waldman's really showing how middle management works in these low-wage environments, isn't she?
Absolutely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, she's showing how the subjective whims, the personal insecurities of one person with a little bit of power can have huge unfair consequences for the people working under them.
Where there's not much accountability.
Exactly. Personal preference gets dressed up as professional judgment all the time, especially when turnover is high and people feel disposable.
Which leads us to the climax, such as it is. It's quiet, right? But brutal. Very quiet. No big scene. Just the announcement. Tim chose Lucas. Wow. And Lucas, does he feel good about it?
He feels a bit guilty, actually, which is smart. Writing, it's not presented as some triumphant win. He knows he won because he played the social angle, not because he deserved it most on merit.
And the fallout for the others.
That's where you see the real damage. That fragile ecosystem in the MISCA department shattered.
Meredith.
Her spirit just deflates. You see it. Her whole belief in loyalty paying off is just gone, extinguished.
And Nicole. The idealist.
Instantly cynical. Her belief in the system, in meritocracy, is just replaced by this hard disillusionment.
So the main takeaway, the theme there, is pretty stark.
Yeah, it's a really powerful, unsentimental takedown of that whole American dream idea that if you just work hard enough, you'll succeed. This novel says, well, maybe not. Maybe the rules are different.
Maybe the game is rigged. And Milo, the philosopher character, he kind of nails it.
What does he say?
He reflects that the worst part wasn't even losing the job. The worst part was being forced to fight his coworkers over something so relatively small in the grand scheme of things.
That's profound.
It is. He realizes that full-time job wasn't really freedom. It was just, as he puts it, a slightly better version of the same cage.
Still trapped, just with slightly shinier bars, maybe health insurance.
Exactly. The cage of economic insecurity is still there. Which highlights that the core issue isn't just the lack of one good job, it's the deliberate scarcity built into the system.
Forcing people to compete against each other instead of uniting.
Precisely. Instead of building solidarity horizontally, they're forced into this destructive vertical competition.
And in showing all this, showing their struggles and skills, Waldman really elevates the idea of the dignity of labor, doesn't she?
She absolutely does. Yeah. She pushes back hard against the way we often devalue retail or service work.
Makes you see the people behind the counter. Yeah. You see their intelligence, the effort, the emotional labor involved that often goes completely unnoticed. She forces you, the reader, to recognize their full humanity.
These aren't just nameless clerks. They're complex people.
Right. And interestingly, while the competition really strains their relationships, the book does hint at another path.
Oh, like what?
Well, you see characters like Nicole and Milo starting to think differently. moving towards maybe group consciousness, thinking about collective action.
Solidarity as the real answer.
As the only real answer, perhaps. The story isn't just about who won the job, but about the slow realization that the system is the problem, and you can't beat it alone. You have to challenge it together.
So thinking about the novel's impact, its real value seems to be how it shifts your perspective. It makes you see the human cost behind, you know, the convenience of buying cheap stuff.
Yeah, the dashed hopes and the sheer exhaustion hidden behind the scenes.
It really stays with you. It does. And maybe the provocative thought to leave listeners with is this. If economic insecurity is constantly designed to make people fight each other over limited resources, how much does that constant infighting distract everyone from looking up and challenging the system that created that scarcity in the first place? That's a powerful question to chew on, a really important one.
It is.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.